Five, four, three, two, one.
I don't even know what's happening.
Put in sport mode, and you're gonna fly.
Just exactly how awesome was it?
The mighty, mighty Nissan GT-R.
You got the Mustang, the Camaro, the Challenger, the Corvette, the Viper.
America. Damn, I forgot the bananas.
I love this.
And we'll do it live! Live! And we'll do it live!
Hola, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. This is Christian Moe, and it's time to listen to the TopSpeed.com podcast. TopSpeed.com is your internet home for all the crazy, cool, and amazing things that are automotive-based, have engines, have wheels, they go fast, they're fun, they carry things, we like them. Anyways, like I said, I am Christian Moe, and today, it's Wednesday, not Thursday, so happy Wednesday, everybody.
Or and, Friday.
Or whatever day you're listening to this.
Friday, you know.
Happy whatever day it is to you. I'm joined by Mr. Mark McNabb. Hello, Mark.
What's up? How are you? I'm good.
Yeah. It's kind of
early, so I'm tired.
Yeah.
And there you are sipping some juice.
Yeah, but it's empty.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah.
And it's
my fantastic water right here, so I'm, you know, pumped from that.
Yeah, I can't find my Camelback bottle. I'm not sure what I did with that. So I'm sipping some green tea today.
Yeah. There you go. Green tea's good for you, man.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, this is probably full of sugar and crap, so it's not good for you, but normal green tea is great.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways, like I said, this is the TopSpeed.com podcast. It's an automotive podcast, and we're hopefully going to spend most of our time talking about automotive things. We don't have Justin today because he's a loser and he's on vacation. But we're going to go ahead and jump into things here. First, a quick thanks to everyone who's watching and listening. Thank you, guys. We like you. We love you.
Hey, yeah.
Welcome. If you're watching or listening later, I love you too.
But not as much.
No, don't listen to him. I love you just as much. Probably.
You have harsh criticism and judgment from me, so just,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like you at all.
Get on the bandwagon. Join us live.
All right. We're going to start with Weekly Wheels, like always. And Mark's got the better one, so we'll let Mark go first.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Let me get my build sheet.
Mark is not prepared, so we're going to let Mark go first.
Here we go. But it's worth the wait. It's worth the wait, because I had the Range Rover Autobiography Long Wheelbase Edition. This is basically the same car that you had, Christian, like a month ago.
But with the Autobiography, I did not have that.
That's true. This thing is like Mac Daddy loaded. I wish I had half this cash so I could go buy a house. This thing came with a 5-liter V8. Of course, it's making 510 horsepower and 461 pound-feet of torque. Ridiculous. Even in the long wheelbase edition, it's still like super quick. It's so surprising how quick it is. And you know, all wheel drive gives you some good traction off the line, so you're never having to squeal tires or anything like that. So total price, I just gotta say it. $143,000.
So much money.
That is insanity. The option package, the one single option package, is 36.8. That's more than half the cars we talk about on the show anyway. Like, that's ridiculous. One option is $36,000.
That is almost as much as the car I'm going to talk about today.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I hope you have some extra cash in your pocket left over, because that V8 is only going to net you 14 mpg city, 19 highway, and 16 combined. And I saw just about 17 during my time with the car. So, just, you know, through that cash. But other way, anyway, that's what I'm trying to say. The car itself is just great. The best seat in the house, obviously, is the back seats, because it is a long wheelbase edition, and the rear seats recline like crazy amounts. So, I mean, you can lay it down. They have heating, cooling, massaging. I mean, everything. Interior ergonomics and stuff is fantastic. I have really no complaints except for a couple. One is the proximity key locking system. You know how you touch the door handle and it's supposed to lock for you?
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't, like, it took 3 or 4 times with my thumb on the door handle, and it's like, come on, come on, come on. Oh, okay, there it went. And it's like, I just feel like that should be a little quicker. And what was my other complaint? Oh, the DVD system. Same complaint as last time. And I know you had a separate, you didn't complain about this.
Did you try using the remote control?
Yes, but you have to be in the back seat for that. Because if you're in the front seat, you have to hold it back like this to point it at the receiver, which is above the mirror.
Right.
So I'm getting in the car. My kid's in the back seat. She wants to watch Finding Nemo, and I need to play it. So I went through it on my video. I have to hit media, source, DVD, back to source, then tell it what monitor to play. On, you know, because you've got 2 of them. Then I have to go back to my video. Then I have to hit start. And then I have to wait until I can get to, like, the top menu section or whatever like that, and then hit play. Like, there's just no, like, put it in and it plays.
So the way I would handle the situation is I would, first off, I want to say hi, Hulti, because he's watching.
Oh.
I would turn the car on before you ever put the child in it. Have the car running so the air conditioner can go or the heater can go. You can get the cabin a nice temperature. Go get the child. Put the child in the back seat. While you're there putting the child in the back seat, grab the remote, power on, play movie, leave that be. Then you hop into the front seat and you away.
Yes, but anytime you turn the car off and turn the car on, everything's reset. So it doesn't know what source, it doesn't know what screen to play on, and it doesn't remember any of the other settings. And it's so frustrating. I don't know why it doesn't remember where you are in the disk and stuff like that. It's just really...
Oh, it doesn't even remember where you are on the disk?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It does that. It does that.
Okay.
But it doesn't remember any of the settings. So it's really mind-boggling to me is why it doesn't do that.
Well, because Land Rover wants to give you the experience of being a parent. So before, like, in-car DVD systems, driving anywhere with a kid was an absolute utter nightmare. It was a terrible headache. Now that we have these systems, it's not a headache at all. So they're like, we should give them some of that nostalgic experience of life being terrible to travel somewhere with a kid, and we'll make our DVD system awful.
Basically. But, I mean, like, the system itself was great. Like, it played movies well. The audio was, of course, fantastic with a 3D Meridian sound system. But it was just getting there. That was the hardest part, and that was the most frustrating part. So, I mean, you know, if it was somehow streamlined, and I said it on my video, you know, Land Rover, if there is a better way to do this, and it's in the system, I don't see it. So that means it's not intuitive.
Yeah.
Period. So, you know.
What was the car I had a complaint about for that? There was some car that I couldn't figure out how to connect my phone via Bluetooth. And I did a review on it, and I got complaints from people. They were like, why didn't you just read the manual, dummy? It's not that hard. And my response is, I drive a new car every week. That's 52 cars a year, not including events we get to go on. If I'm driving 52 different cars every single year and I can figure out all of those systems, if I have to break out the manual to figure out how to connect a Bluetooth phone to your car, you're doing it wrong.
Yep.
That's just the end of it. If I have to resort to the manual after all the other things I can figure out, it's too hard. That is not how that works.
Yeah. It's so funny because, like, you know, I just got back from that Ford event last week. And it's amazing the steps they went through on their infotainment system and, like, trying to figure out how that worked because, you know, they have this really big TFT display in the center gauge cluster, and it's got all these, like, truck apps and stuff like that to where you can, like, program, like, you know, what you want to see, when you want to see it, like, on your gauge cluster. And apparently what they did was they gave these people in, like, the focus groups or whatever note cards, and they said, write down what you want to see and how you want it organized. And they took all these people's information and kind of, you know, put it all together and made it super simple, and it worked. And, you know, it seems like more of that needs to happen, especially with Land Rover.
Right, yeah. I mean, That infotainment system is so slow and terrible. They said we're getting a new one. When the XE comes out, Jaguar Land Rover is getting a new infotainment system. But, like, when you're selling cars that cost close to $150,000, that should just be fixed to begin with.
Yeah. Well, I don't really have a complaint too much about the whole system as a whole. Like, yeah, it's a little laggy, but not terrible.
It's GPS also works well. Convoluted as hell. And, like, poorly designed. Like, I hate the screen for satellite radio. Which, I don't know if you got a picture, but like, when you hit satellite radio, you get, over on one side, you get a huge display of channels. And then over here, you get a huge display of, like, your favorites. And, I mean, you have this massive screen, and then up in the very top little corner is just a little box that says what channel you're on, and, like, the song name. It doesn't even give you a band name. Like it doesn't even give you all the information. You have to hit another button that's, like, the information button, and it gives you a pop-up. And that pop-up doesn't update when the song changes, so you have to close it and then hit it again if you want to know who the hell the song is from.
Yeah.
There's a massive... It's like a 9-inch screen. I mean, it's essentially like an iPad sitting in the dash, and they can't figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I understand that. And I definitely agree with you. You know, there is some things that I think could be cleaned up. But, I mean, as a whole, it's not a terrible system. But, yeah, the XM satellite was a little weird. Because I had, the kid in the car most of the time, it seems like the DVD system was always being used, and I didn't get to listen to the radio that much. So, I didn't have that issue with satellite radio just because I didn't encounter it. But anyway, let's talk about what you were rolling in, something in the Yoda department, right?
Uh-oh, Mark, are you there?
I'm here. Yeah, I'm here. Uh-oh.
Mark, are you there?
I'm here. You're not here now. I don't know what's going on.
Well, while we wait for him to catch up, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to talk about my car. I had a Toyota Avalon. Maybe.
I'm here.
Okay, hey, there you are.
I'm here. I've been here the whole time. Never stopped breathing.
Well, you stopped breathing on my end. So, anyways, like I said, I was just going to go on without you and wait for you to catch up.
Well, here I am.
So I am driving the Toyota Avalon this week, which is the same car I had like a few weeks ago. But a few weeks ago, I had the hybrid version. This is the not hybrid version. Both of these cars were limited trim models. So that means all the bells, all the whistles, all the options, leather, sat nav, the whole nine yards. The only difference really between the two cars was the exterior paint color. And the drivetrain. So this one, the normal gasoline one, 3.5 liter V6, 268 horsepowers, 6-speed automatic. So no CVT to deal with.
Yes.
You have 268 horsepower. Yeah. It's also way worse to drive in every way.
Really?
Yes. So without the torque from the electric motors and the batteries. Like, now, if you're really hammering on it, like if you just freaking stand on the pedal and you try to beat on this thing, this is obviously quicker. It's quicker to 60. It has a much better top end. You have more power in the top end. But for normal driving, like the 90% of the time driving, the hybrid feels quicker because you have that sort of thrust from the electric motor. You just have that extra torque. You have this whoosh sort of feeling. Steering. Steering is heavier in the hybrid, and it was actually like it felt better in the hybrid. In this one, like you can breathe on the wheel and it'll spin in a circle, and it feels like it's not attached to the front wheels at all. Brakes, because in the hybrid you have regenerative braking, the brakes are better in the hybrid, and the hybrid also handles better because you have that huge battery pack in the back, so you have better weight balance.
I guess that makes sense.
You can tell this car is super nose heavy. Cyprian's here too. Hi, Cyprian. Hello. Well, I try to tell people the way I describe handling in a car and what I'm looking for is where do you feel the car pull? Like when you get that lateral G-force, does it feel like the heaviest part of the car, the part that's moving the most, is like at your wrists, like where the steering wheel is, or is it like behind you, or is it like where you sit? And like that's the thing I look for. So like in a Miata or like a BMW 3 Series or whatever, you don't feel the car pull, because that center of momentum is like right at your hips, the car sort of turns around you. In something like my Golf, it feels kind of like it's at the elbows because that's like a front-heavy car, so it feels like the front of the car wants to pull. In something like the Cayman that I drove or like the Lamborghini, the back of it, like it's way behind you is where you feel that momentum. And this one is like it feels like the wrists. Like it's super far forward on the momentum scale. Just feels really nose-heavy. And you didn't get that in the hybrid. Now, all that said, it's still not a bad car. I still enjoyed it. You still have all that comfort. You still have that Lexus level of luxury. It's still just as quiet. I mean, I see no reason why anybody would ever buy an ES over an Avalon.
Yeah, really. But, I'd second that seriously.
But if I was going to buy an Avalon, I'd buy the hybrid. And not just because it's better to drive. This one says 31 on the sticker for mileage for highway. I averaged about 30 with mostly highway driving. And I averaged 39 almost in the hybrid. So that's a 30% fuel economy difference.
That's pretty 30%.
Good. And then this is the biggest kicker. Hybrids always cost more money. This car, after options and everything, is $42,700. The hybrid I drove was $44,500. $2,000.
Yeah, that's not terrible. Not, you know, so, not even financing, I guess.
But, right, and I mean, you know, for $2,000, like, the hybrid, a 30% fuel economy boost, and it's better to drive. Like, yeah. That $2,000 is nothing at that point.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, I spent time in an Avalon, the standard edition. It may even be the same car. What color is yours?
The other one was maroon.
This one's like a deep gray.
Cypress pearl. It's like a deep gray green.
Okay. Well, probably not then. But yeah, I spent time in an Avalon Limited a couple months ago, and you know, I really liked it. The car mostly for me was more of like a highway cruiser. I could see this being the replacement for the Lincoln Town Car. Like that's sort of kind of what audience I imagine this going for. You know, like the well-off retired folk who don't want the Lincoln. I mean, they don't want the Lexus. They want it's Toyota, I can get it fixed at the Toyota dealership type thing, you know, whatever. That's kind of what I see it for. And it works well as a great highway cruiser and just kind of a round-town putabout. And it's so much, like, the seats in that thing were amazing. So,
no, you know, like, I mean,
that's
kind of
what
that.
I see
like,
it as.
That's what the Avalon is. The Avalon is an old people's car. And so I get that they're not going to worry about the handling. But, again, even if you forget about how much better it is to drive, 30% fuel economy boost. $2,000 for $2,000.
Yeah.
Like that's it. Yes, $2,000 will buy you a lot of fuel. So will 10 miles to the gallon. Because that's essentially what the difference is between these cars. It's from 30 to 40. Like, that's a massive jump.
Yeah, I mean, the payoff sounds, you know, pretty short, so hopefully, you know, somebody will be smart when they buy, especially if they, you know, do a lot of in-state driving or in-city driving or whatever. So anyway, we got to move on. More Porsche news, right?
Yeah, actually. I'm going to do one quick thing over here. But yeah, more Porsche news. So, wow. Sorry, I've got extra wires over here.
I like your elbow. It's very in my face.
Yeah. Glad you enjoy that. So the Porsche 718 was a car that was rumored to be made, and I kept telling people it's not going to be made, but now it's proved not to not be made. The 718 was going to be like a cheap car underneath the Boxster. The idea was that Porsche was going to make a smaller entry-level car, be, you know, a little cheaper, a little more affordable. That's what the four-cylinder engines were going to go into, and that was going to be what happened. Now, Porsche's CEO, or, well, the president of Porsche North America has come out and said, that's not happening. That's not a thing. We're not going to do that. That would drive the bottom end of the car company too low. Porsche's entry-level car is a pre-owned program. That's what he said. So that was his quote. Our entry-level model is our pre-owned program. So if you want a cheaper Porsche, you buy a used one. And I really agree with this idea. Porsche has lots of models to attract new buyers to the brand. They've got the Macan now, which is selling so fast, there's a six-month waiting list for that thing. They've got the Cayenne SUV. I mean, they've got the Panamera sedan. They have cars to bring people in to the brand that aren't necessarily sports car people. And then by not having a cheaper sports car, they still keep their little like halo idea of Porsche makes sports cars. You know,
I mean, yeah,
worry about what would happen. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, you know, even being in this business and knowing that Porsche makes SUVs, you still say Porsche, I think 911. I think Boxster.
I think sports.
I think Cayman. I don't think, you know, Macan or Cayenne.
Right.
It just, that's not the first thing that comes to mind. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. Porsche does make an SUV.
Yeah, because it's just like, they do make some other things.
Oh, yeah, you know. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it is.
Right, but yeah, a Porsche is a 911. Like, if you just tell somebody randomly, oh, yeah, I've got a Porsche, they're not going to think, oh, he's probably got the SUV. Yeah, they're going to be like, ooh, 911. Yeah, and another thing that worried me is because Porsche is still a small company and they have to, like, spread everything across the brand, across the brands, is one of two things would happen if they made a smaller, cheaper Boxster. Either it would be so good because they brought 911, because they brought 911 Cayman stuff down. It would be so good that there almost wouldn't be reason to buy Boxster Cayman. Or they would have to start at the bottom for like a benchmark for what they want the 718 to be, and then they would try to scale it up for the other cars. And then that would make the other cars worse. That was my thought on either way of the thing. So
yeah, I could see that.
That's what
it was. It's like they've got a limited space and they want to make everything fit. And so in order to make this thing fit over here, you've got to adjust all this crap over here. So yeah, I mean,
right.
Like,
and I mean they don't have all the money in the world to make like dedicated platforms and engines and everything for every single model. So like they have to share all this stuff across the line. So it's like when you're going to share, do you start with the best and share down and hope that your bottom level car doesn't eat into the upper level stuff? Or do you start at the bottom and share up and hope that you can make the top level car good enough?
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's true.
So yeah, there's going to be no 718, which means the 4-cylinder engines that we know Porsche is working on will be for the Boxster Cayman.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be fine too.
Yeah.
All right, let's do a little bit more CEO news. Aston Martin and Mercedes-Benz.
Oh, yeah.
That's been the big thing.
Yeah, so apparently at the Paris Auto Show, the Daimler chief, Dr. Z, you know, he basically came out and said, quote, there are no plans to increase our stake or take over Aston Martin. So right now they have a 5%. Like share
non-voting share
voting yeah non-voting like they basically can't do anything. It's just like, hey, our foot's in the door, nice to see ya, let's work together. So basically the only thing that Aston Martin is going to benefit from this is the, you know, the AMG partnership where they're going to share engine and, you know, mechanical stuff. Not going to be any sort of like tie-in business wise it's going to be strictly for that. And apparently Mercedes obviously now has no intention of coming in and sweeping up Aston Martin and making them kind of a subsidy company. So Aston Martin is going to stay on their own, good or bad. I imagine if Mercedes isn't buying them, it's going to be for their good because Mercedes thinks they can stand on their own. So, you know, we'll have to see. So, I mean, that's good news.
And I also like Mercedes thinking on a lot of this. So one of the things that Dr. Z said was, we don't want to absorb that brand because we don't want to take focus away from their other stuff. And the idea is, if you have this big, exciting luxury brand, what if Mercedes is like, well, we're going to take, you know, just a year or whatever to dump a whole bunch of resources into this and make all these new things. And then you sort of end up in this, you know, well, that year expanded into 18 months, expanded into whatever, and you're putting all this resource into this one little thing that sells 4,000 cars a year, and you sort of start to neglect some of your other cars because of that, and they don't want to get into that sort of issue. So I can appreciate that, too.
Yeah, yeah, and that's exactly what they said. You know, Aston is only 400 or 4,000 units a year, so there's danger that we would be distracted from our own core business. quote from Dr. Z. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, from the horse's mouth, it ain't gonna happen.
I'm not sure how happy Dr. Z would be about you calling him a horse.
Nay.
Nay, I'm not happy.
Nine.
All right, let's talk about some French stuff. All right. So PSA Peugeot Citroën is the big French company that owns Peugeot and Citroën. Used to be able to get some of these cars here in the United States. That stopped 20 or so years ago. Actually, yeah, almost 25 years ago. 1991 was when Peugeot left. Okay. But Citroën has a super awesome little car group called the DS in Europe and everywhere. They've got the little DS3, tiny hot hatch thing. They've got a slightly bigger DS5, stuff like that. Really cool little funky French hatches. And recently, the company decided to split DS off as its brand. Like there's no longer going to be a Citroën DS3. It's just going to be the DS3. Like it's going to be its own brand. And they want to take that brand global. And obviously, and then this is one of the quotes, obviously if you want to be global, North America is part of the global market. We aren't the biggest car market in the world anymore. That's now China. But we are still one of the biggest. So if you want to be a global brand, you have to sell here. Yep. So that's kind of the idea, is now they're going to start making these cool little funky French hatches, and they're going to start bringing them over here again. This isn't going to be super soon. The plan is to bring it into 200 large cities across the world. So it'll only be a couple of dealerships here in America, probably something like Miami, New York, LA, that sort of thing. And it'll be 2020 or later.
Wow, so yeah, this is like five-year plan type stuff.
Yeah, so part of the big issue right now is that none of the cars they make meet the requirements to be sold worldwide as far as like emissions and crash testing, all that sort of stuff, because every single country has their own stupid-ass rules, so nobody agrees with anybody.
Yeah.
So, it's like a five-year plan. This isn't going to be a super soon thing, but it is a thing that's going to happen. And I think that's cool, and I think they're doing it a smart way. I think a lot of people, either in America, you're going to have one of two things. People who have no idea who these French brands are, and they won't care, or you're going to have people who know who these French brands are and be like, I'm never going to buy that because the old ones were freaking garbage. By having a whole new car brand, this DS brand, you can, it's like a clean slate for them. They can come in, they can market it clean and fresh, and nobody be like, oh, what is this thing? And they'll just focus on the marketing. Be like, oh, that's cute, that's interesting, it's stylish. And that's where they're going to kind of go. They're going to start there and move on. And I think it's an ambitious but probably intelligent plan.
Yeah. Hmm. That's interesting. Well, maybe we'll have a new car brand to talk about.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about some V8s.
Yeah. I gotta figure out what's going on. Oh, yep, there we are. That's my topic. All right, back to back to British brands. Jaguar. So, I have to refresh my memory on this. So the XE sedan, the new one that's coming up. We had some news break about that one concerning its all-wheel drive and V8 availability. And yes, all-wheel drive will happen, but it is still unclear on whether it's going to be just the all-weather all-wheel drive, or if that will also have some sort of a performance derivative, so kind of like, you know, like your Nissan GTR type all-wheel drive system. And I'm gonna lean towards it's all-weather, and I think you would probably agree with that too,
probably, because
I just don't see Jaguar doing an all-wheel drive system for performance. It just doesn't seem to fit their bill.
Right, I think the money, weight, and complexity of doing a huge torque vectoring all-wheel drive system is probably beyond the scope of what they've got planned.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem to jive. I mean, look at the 3 Series. You can get a 3 Series in all-wheel drive. You can get the M3, but you can't get the M3 with all-wheel drive because it's not the same system. It's not built for performance. But what we do know is that we are going to have a performance variant with that that awesome 5-liter V8 that is that's in the F-Type.
Ooh. Well, it's – so he didn't say we were getting one.
Yeah, but he wants to.
Right. This is one of those no wink. So when the spokesman for Jag was asked about the V8, his words were, yes, the V8 will fit in the XE.
Yes.
He didn't say, yes, we're going to build one. He said, that engine will fit. The car was created to hold this engine. Now, does that mean we'll get the 550 horsepower version from the, you know, Jag Coupe R? Probably not. I think the first one we'll probably get would be the 500 horsepower model, like the 5 to 510.
That's, well, yeah, I mean, that's fine.
That's but in the XF, that sort of stuff.
We'll still get the V8.
Right, I mean, there's still going to be a V8. And it's still going to be like 500 plus horsepower.
This thing could blow the
3 Series.
Yeah, this thing could blow the 3 Series out of the water. Or the, I guess, yeah, 3 Series, not the 4. Yeah, so I mean, yeah, that would be... It'd be fantastic. We're also talking about another new engine. It's going to be a derivative of that 2-liter 4-cylinder that's coming out. They're going to throw some extra cylinders on it and have a 3-liter inline 6.
Which is super cool.
It's kind of cool because 6-cylinder inline 6s are inherently well-balanced, and it would be
they're incredibly smooth engines.
Nice free-ranging engine, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, that's what BMW uses for a reason.
Yeah, all their stuff.
Yeah, and they also said that engine will theoretically fit in the XE also.
Yeah. Apparently, the thing's got a decent sized engine bay, so.
Right. The only thing that sort of gets me about the straight six is Jag has that awesome supercharged V6 right now that it's relatively new to the platform. So, why are they going to get rid of that for straight six?
Yeah. Say what?
So why are they going to get rid of that for straight six?
Well, I don't think they are. I think that's going to be an optional engine. And, you know, he did mention the, you know, the availability or the possibility of the XE, like, type, or XER or XERS, which would include that 3-liter supercharged V8, or V6. So, you know, if we're pulling F-type engines and putting them in this car, nothing bad can happen. It just seems like it would be really... a fantastic buy.
That's true. Yeah. F-Type in the sedan.
I take that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are worse things.
I haven't written too much stuff about the XC, but correct me if I'm wrong, but basically the suspension components of that car are F-Type. Right? The front clip is F-Type.
But the F-Type is also sort of derivative from some of their other models. Because again, small car company, so everything's based on everything else.
I know.
I do think it is more F-type than it is like XF.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, that'd be fantastic. So.
All right.
Well, let's get 11 comments on that.
News. Actually, I'm going to give you this last one.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's me as well. Wow.
Yeah.
gosh, I'm dominated.
Domination.
Blah, blah, blah. So, speaking of domination, Camaro, boy, oh boy, oh boy, we have seen so many spy shot photos of the new 2016 Camaro come out, and so we decided to make a render of it, and stop showing off, Christian.
I'm not showing off, I'm fiddling. When you're talking, they see you. This is way too small for them to see.
You and your Porsche key. Porsche, whatever. So, yeah.
We're supposed to tell them it's going to be a surprise for next week.
Oh, my bad. So, I've lost my train of thought. Thank you.
Spy shots for the Camaro.
Spy shots and renderings. Yes, we made a fantastic rendering, which I really like, of the new 2016 Camaro. And it seems to really follow the spy shots pretty well. So, you know, of course, there's all these rumors surrounding the car and what it's going to be like and what engines are going to be under the hood and all this sort of stuff. But let me tell you my speculation, and that's what you're going to read in this article. And I can back it up with it sounds kind of convoluted, but my girlfriend's dad is a huge Camaro nut. He has a ZL1. He follows, like, Camaro 5, Camaro 6 forums all the time, like, you know, F-Bod father type kind of guy. So anyway... You know, talking with him and everything that he sees from the forums and kind of understanding the kind of the back, you know, back burner issues going on with the Camaro. So, you know, obviously we know it's going to be on the Alpha platform. Hey, that's a given. It's going to share the same platform as the ATS and the CTS Cadillac sedans. And it's going to be lighter. And we are sort of kind of sure it's going to have a four-cylinder. And there's some people that argue that. I think it's going to happen. It's going to be that same 2-liter turbocharged engine from the ATS sedan. And because the car is going to be weighing lighter than the sedan, it will likely be faster, which obviously Camaro should. We'll probably be getting the LT1 V8 from the Corvette. You know, obviously it's going to be detuned for the Camaro. And then that 3.6 liter V6 is probably still going to come over almost unchanged because it already makes more horsepower than the Mustang's engines, and the car is going to be lighter than the Mustang. So, yeah.
I thought the new Mustang got like a teeny tiny bump to have like one more horsepower than the Camaro or some crap.
Nope. The 3.6 liter V6 that's in the current car makes 323 horsepower, 323 horsepower, and 278 pound-feet of torque. The V6 Mustang, the 3.7 liter, only makes 300, and the new 2.3 liter EcoBoost 4-cylinder only makes
325. Yeah.
Oh, 305 out of the EcoBoost.
Okay, but the horsepower of the EcoBoost is what concerns me about GM putting a 2.0 in. I don't think immediately they're going to do it. I think they're going to wait and see how well the Mustang Turbo 4 sells, because the Turbo 4 that's in the Cadillac doesn't make enough horsepower.
The 2-liter in the Cadillac makes 270 horsepower. I don't think that a tune or a little bump in turbo size or whatever like that couldn't bump that up to 305 horsepower.
Say, because it would have to be more than the Mustang. Otherwise, they would never sell. And it would have to be more than the V6. Because that's how Mustang has them tiered. Is it's V6, yeah. EcoBoost, V8. So I don't see why GM would do 2.0 turbo. Because that 2.0 turbo motor is more expensive than the V6 engine to make.
Yeah.
So I don't see why they would put that as the base engine.
Yeah, I mean, that is a conundrum, and, you know, I ran into this in the article, too, is, you know, how they would structure that or how they would tier it. And, yeah, I mean, that is kind of a conundrum, and hopefully, you know, they'll work it out. I kind of see the, you know, maybe they'll kind of switch up their marketing a little bit on the V6, and since that won't be the base engine, they'll kind of put a little bit more oomph into that one or something like that. And maybe the 2-liter will be the base engine, you know? I don't know.
I just muscle car people are weird people.
Yeah, and you don't want to stick a 4-cylinder in their V8 car,
right? And even the ones who buy the V6 cars because that's all they can afford. Yeah, it doesn't matter how good your car is. It's numbers, cylinders, and ponies. Like that's all that matters.
No replacement for displacement in this category.
That's right.
So. But anyway, I think the new Camaro is going to be a fantastic driver's car because it's going to be lighter, it's going to be smaller, shorter, and hopefully with a new LT1, it will be more powerful as well.
God, that's such a sweet motor.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. But, yeah, that's basically all the news surrounding that one.
All right. Well, so let's go ahead, and we're going to move on to questions and answers.
Whoa.
I don't want to jinx us, but this might actually be a one-hour show.
Good, because I have to go to the airport.
Yeah, I know. You have to leave. Mark is going to run away and drive some awesome trucks and stuff. So we're going to start with Fred Grant. Considering the Dodge Charger Hellcat and its amazing performance, Chevy's and Ford's answer.
A ZL1 and the GT350.
Agreed. And I think the new ZL1 is obviously going to be like the old ZL1 and make use of GM's new big supercharged engine, which in the Corvette Z06 is 650 horsepower.
Yeah, I think it's going to be detuned because right now the ZL1 makes 580. If they give it 600 horsepower and drop the weight 400 pounds, yeah.
I think they'll probably shoot closer to 625 just so they can be closer to the 707 of the Hellcat. Because, I mean, right now, the...
I mean, yeah, that's 50. True. Like, numbers game-wise, they're going to be losing either way. Right. Yeah, I don't know. And Ford, what their GT500 came out, it was making 625 or something like that?
620, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Of course, what they always had to wield over everybody was 200 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah.
That was like their big selling point.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's definitely going to be the ZL1 and the GT350, GT500 answer from that. I don't think there's any way around that.
Right. Well, I mean, and we've seen the GT350 spy shots.
Yeah.
And what's the rumor right now? A 5.7-liter flat plane crank V8?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Things are going to be so good.
Yeah. Just utter horsepower. Like, the 1960s doesn't have anything on today. Like, yeah, that's like the classic North Car era, but I'm sorry. Today is like every car coming out has horsepower that would trump, a Chevelle SS.
Right. Like, that's the thing that people don't understand. A V6 Camry today will outrun and has more horsepower than a Ferrari from the 1980s.
Yeah.
Like, that's the world we live in.
You know, it's not a bad day to be a car guy.
Like 1984 or something was the year the Ferrari F40 came out. That was the first production car to break 200 miles an hour. It did 201. And now, you can buy a sedan that will do 200 miles an hour. You could buy a Mustang that will do 200 miles an hour.
It's fantastic.
Oh, it's so good. This world's amazing. All right.
But don't ruin it, Cafe Standards.
I cannot believe I didn't realize what this guy's name was earlier. Our next question is from Luke, I am not your father. Which is the best name.
I ain't your baby daddy.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I just made a quick joke that wasn't funny. Go ahead.
Okay. So, I love how Christian... how excited Christian is when talking about games and gadgets and stuff related to that. And Justin and Mark are like,
yeah.
By the way, what's your take on dash cams? The ones Russians have on all their cars. Do you think it's a good thing? And I know that in some states there are laws that won't let record you someone else without their permission. So, rules about laws and recording. If you are in a public place and you are recording public space, you can record anybody, period, here in the United States. That's it.
Yep. Public domain, you have no reasonable expectation of privacy, quote, the law.
Yes. So if I am in a public space, like on the interstate, I can have a camera on and there's jack you can do about it. I also think they're kind of good ideas, especially for motorcyclists. Not to catch weird, crazy things like meteors exploding over the highway in Russia. All of that stuff's cool. But just for your protection, there are too many instances in this country of hit and runs, of, at-fault accidents where people leave, uninsured motorists, stuff like that. And so if you have that on a camera, then you're protected. And this is especially true if you're a motorcycle, because the number one accident to have somebody leave from is a motorcycle accident. People freak out if they hit someone on a motorbike and they think, oh my God, I killed somebody or whatever, and they'll just leave. And so if you're on a bike and you get hit by a car, you're going to crash because you're on a bike. The world is going to spin. Things are going to flip. You're not going to have any real idea of what's happening, what's going on, what's around you, or even what hit you. If you know what kind of car hit you, that's pretty good, but you're never going to get anything like a license plate or anything like that. There's a chance if you're wearing a helmet cam, if you've got like a dash cam thing going, you'll catch photos of that stuff.
That's true. But on a less serious note, yeah, I love watching crazy Russian dash cam videos, and I think that America needs to catch up.
I don't know about that.
I think it's awesome.
I think driving around here is crazy enough without all of the other stuff that happens in these dash cam videos from Russia happening on my highways as well.
Well, hopefully it wouldn't encourage any more craziness. It would just capture what's already out there. But yeah, I think it would be cool. If I had, tons of money to throw away at camera equipment for my car, then yeah, I'd do it. But
yeah, whatever. I mean, you just need a GoPro.
Yeah. But I mean, they make They make
actual dash cams, yeah.
Like that stay in your car and you just plug in and out your like SD card or whatever like that, and that's all you have to do. Stays in the car. But
yeah, there are a couple that are like crash cams. I've seen some of those. So basically the idea is, yeah, it's a camera that you set in your window and you plug it in and you put an SD card in it, and it keeps a constant loop of like the last hour of footage. And when you finish that hour, it deletes the first minute and adds one more minute on top. And then so if there's ever an issue, like if you catch something or if you get in a car wreck or whatever, you can hit a button and it'll save that footage. Some of them are even really fancy and are actually like crash cameras, and they have like sensors and stuff in them. And when they detect a crash, they automatically record like the last 20 minutes of footage.
So. Yeah, I mean that would be fantastic. And you know, I think don't get me started politically, but as the nanny state grows and these car systems have all these cameras and stuff like that, like my Range Rover, it had cameras all the way around it. You could see every which way. Perhaps automakers will start building that sort of stuff in, you know?
Well, the Corvette's got that with the little
track
camera.
Sort of.
People are trying to rule it's not legal.
Yeah, well, they're saying that the poor little valets don't have a reasonable or their reasonable expectation of privacy is being violated because the car is recording them, which would be super easy to fix by an update on the GPS system saying, you are being recorded.
Yeah.
So that will likely be an update for the 2015 Corvettes. Anyway.
Let's go ahead and we're going to move on. Darren 007 asked a question that is going to take about 3.5 seconds to answer.
Yeah, I know.
What is the concept car you guys think will steal the show at the Paris Motor Show? Lamborghini Asturian.
Yeah, there you go. Which apparently they're not going to build.
Oh, good. Yeah,
stating a fact.
A little bit earlier.
Anyway.
We're going to move on. Thomas Beretta. America has really taken the automobile world by storm this year. I mean, Z06 amazing performance. Challenger Hellcat. Charger Hellcat. Z28. This is a good thing, and I wonder what the rest of the automakers will do, especially the Germans.
America.
This isn't so much a question as a statement, and I just kind of wanted to touch on it. This is what blows my mind about America's automotive thing. If you are someone with money and you want to buy an expensive, fast, exciting, supercar-level machine and you want a manual transmission, the only company that will give you that is America. GM with the Corvette Z06. That's it. You can't get a Ferrari with a manual. Now you can't get an Aston with a manual. You can't get a Jag with a manual. You can't get a Lamborghini with a manual.
You can get the Hellcat.
Right, you can get a Hellcat with a manual, you can get a Z28 with a manual, you can get a ZL1 with a manual. All of these crazy American cars you can get with three pedals.
Yeah.
In fact, I think the only like super crazy exotic car company that will sell you a manual is, I think, Koenigsegg still will, and Pagani will. Mm. So you can get a Pagani Huayra with a manual. But like,
you know, like,
that's it.
I'm sorry, I would rather be 2/10 or 3/10 or a second slower than the next guy, but have three pedals and enjoy my drive. The other 99.99999% of the time, I'm not drag racing him. And
not tracking it, right.
You know, like, give me three pedals and let me hear the burble when I downshift to 3 to 2, you know?
I mean, like, that's the whole thing. And that's my big thought on it is, if I have the money to buy a car like this and I want a track toy, I am going to also just buy a track toy.
A real Adam. You know what?
Then maybe I'll get a car with a fancy flappy paddle, dual clutch, 0.00001 second shift time, whatever, because I'm trying to maximize my track time. But if I'm going to buy, especially like convertible cars, like, if I'm going to buy a convertible Ferrari, I want the top gone, I want three pedals, and I want to meander at speed down this back road with all this noise and sunshine and wind, and I want that experience. I don't want to be able to tell my friends that, oh, yes, I am 0.03146 seconds faster around Mazda Laguna Raceway. So...
Yeah, well,
Yeah, a lot of arrogant people out there don't feel that way, so.
Well, that's why they're all stupid and nobody likes them.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Yep, we have one last little bitty thing. It is time for Own Drive. Burn.
Bum, bum, bum.
This week's is from Halty. All cars have a manual, Halty says, an owner's manual. That's a terrible joke, but damn it, it's funny. Anyways, this Own Drive Burn is from Halty. Here are three new cars.
All right.
We have BMW M3, Mercedes-Benz C63 AMG, Lexus RCF.
For fun.
And then Halty says, don't rush and burn the RCF. It has a nice V8. Show it some love.
I'm going to go first?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going first?
Yes, sir, you are.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm not going to burn the RCF because I've driven the RCF, and I think it's fantastic. The C63 AMG, yeah, it's a cool car, but I don't know. I will set a match to that one, I guess. I want to drive the M3 at least once because it is the M3 and it's, you know, kind of the benchmark and stuff like that. And the RCF, I can get fixed at my local Toyota dealership, and it doesn't cost $1,500 to get a light bulb changed. And I will own that forever because it's Toyota and it won't break it 400,000 miles.
What costs $1,500 to get a light bulb changed?
It's a BMW dealership. Everything costs $1,500.
Or you can just do it yourself.
Or I'm just making a point. Oil change? That's $300 because it uses like 5W80 oil from Europe imported with the BMW symbol on it.
See, I fight all that with my Golf, so I'm like, whatever. To buy oil for my Golf diesel because it takes a very special low ash burning oil, it's like $13 a quart.
And that's ridiculous. That's stupid.
And my headlights, because I have fancy HID headlights, if you take it to the dealer to get both of your headlights replaced, it is like a $600 or $700 job. Because the bulbs are like $100 a piece, and you have to either remove the entire fuse assembly on the driver's side or pull the wheel out and pull the lining out of the wheel well.
Wow, that is dumb.
Now, the passenger side's fine. You can just reach it. Like, basically, there's just a rubber plug on the headlight, and then there's a big plug that bolts into your little xenon bulb, and the xenon bulb just twists and come out. But the clearance is so tight on the driver's side that unless your hand is, like, a teeny tiny little, like, raccoon claw, you can't get the light bulb out. So the easiest way to do it is just pull the tire off. There's like six screws that hold that first piece of the inner fender well out. Just pull that out, and you can reach in from underneath and grab it.
Yeah, that's too much.
But also, and if you don't buy your light bulbs from the Volkswagen dealership, you can find them fairly cheap. I bought a pair of bulbs. They're still name brand Osram light bulbs, the same kind that I pulled out, and it was $81 for the pair instead of $100 a piece.
That's a good it's a good buy.
And they lasted me 100,000 miles.
There you go. So, yeah, how many miles do you have on your Golf?
It is 99,300 and something.
Wow.
I'm going on vacation next week, and I'm driving it to the Keys, so it'll have well over 100,000 miles when I get back.
I expect to see a picture of 100,000 miles on your odometer.
If I remember to stop, because that's going to happen somewhere around Orlando when it's like late at night and I've been driving all day.
Well, I'll take a picture of it for you. All right, what's your answer on this?
I'm going to burn the RCF.
Oh, you suck.
So I've driven the M3, and it's amazing. I've driven the new M4 a little bit, and it's also amazing. And I have been thrown around the C63 by a drift driver, and that makes the most glorious noise in the world. So I think I would keep the C63 because I love that noise. It's not as good, I'm guaranteeing, to drive as the M3, but it's pretty close, and I get that great devil growl noise. So I'd keep the C63, I'd drive the M3 once, and I'd... Actually, you know what? I'm going to change all of this. I am going to keep the C63, but I'm going to burn the M3 because I've driven it before, and I'll drive the RCF.
There you go. That's fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I like the RCF. I think that's it's a great attempt, you know, a first attempt from Lexus to build a decent, you know, obtainable sports car. And I think that they did a pretty good job.
So, all right.
Yeah.
We are going to come in under an hour.
Dude, 4 minutes. 4 minutes.
No. Victory. For once, we actually have a podcast that ran on time.
Yeah, oh, my gosh. And we started on time, too. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
I need to take more flights.
Or we're just going to say it's Justin's fault because he's the one that's not here. Blame Justin.
Anyway.
All right. So thank you, everyone, for hanging out, paying attention. We love you. We appreciate you. As always, please, comments, questions, everything goes down there below. You can also send us an email, podcast@topspeed.com. You can find us on the Twitters. The podcast Twitter handle is topspeedpodcast, so it's super easy. You can find me at Moeferd. That is MOEFERD. We have Mark, which is at Mark McNabb. Big super N, easy. Little C, big N, A-B-B.
Yeah, but not on Twitter. It's all the same.
Twitter, Instagram, all the thingies.
Just at
Mark. So, anyways, yeah, thank you, everyone. Again, questions, comments, own drive burn suggestions, we need all those. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We love you very much. We're going to play some music, and that'll be the end of our show.
Peace and blessings.
Bye, guys.